Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to Chemist Corner for Friday, November 21st, 2014. Hello and welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski. We've got an interesting show for you today, including some tips about choosing a second supplier for cosmetic ingredients and an interview with Irina Tudor, a fragrance expert from the Netherlands. But first, let's talk about a few science stories that have recently been in the news. Here's some stories that I've seen in the news recently. I troll around the cosmetic science feeds and see all sorts of industry stories. Here's one from about Olay's research showing that research in Beijing showed that air pollution can actually have an effect on your skin health. This was a clinical study done by Procter & Gamble, the company that produces Olay, and they were able to show that the skin health and appearance was affected by the pollution in the air. So there was a correlation between the pollution and, you know, less hydrated skin and less, you know, skin that doesn't look as good. So there's an idea for people looking for a unique niche is maybe start making anti-pollution lotions. Here's another study here talking about a congressman who is pledging to take the lead on a ban of animal testing in the United States. It's a Democratic congressman from Virginia, Don Beyer. He wants to enact some legislation that makes animal testing for cosmetics illegal, like it is in Europe and India and Israel, and, you know, around the world there are places. The thing is that this seems like an overblown issue, as there's not much animal testing being done for cosmetics, and it's easy to get around those bans. In Europe, for example, there's a ban for testing for cosmetics, but if an ingredient is going to be used in pharmaceuticals, then it still can be animal tested. And so what companies are doing is they're saying, well, this has pharmaceutical applications as well as cosmetic ones, and so they kind of just get around it. This gives the congressperson something to focus on rather than focusing on things that might really affect the country. All right, then I saw another story about cosmetic European regulators have made a ban on the claim that cosmetics are not tested on animals. So now it is illegal to say on your pack, not tested on animals in the EU. This pretty much because animal testing is illegal there for cosmetics. So they don't allow not claims for something that is obvious, evidently. So they think this is going to help consumers in choosing products and foster competition and promote innovation. So you won't be able to say not tested on animals on your package anymore. So there you go. And finally, I saw this one story about a scent being sent across the Atlantic. Christopher Laudmiel, a fragrance chemist in Paris, sent the aromic message to a Harvard professor, David Edwards, and co-inventor Rachel Field at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. So the smell was odors of a chocolate muffin, beignet with butter, and cereal, and strawberries, and yogurt. So very interesting there. It was sent by an app called OSnap. It's a new iPhone app. It's being produced by Vapor Communications, and this could be the future of communicating scents. I can imagine this being used by advertisers when they have a new product launch. You'll have it at your computer. You click on it to see what it smells like, and that would encourage purchase. So look for that. And actually, they're looking to create this O-phone for everybody. Right now, it's only able to produce a small fraction of scents, but they have a Kickstarter campaign, which is trying to get pre-orders for $149 for one of these. It's Very interesting. So there you have it, just a tour through some of the cosmetic science stories that have interested in me. There was a question asked on the Cosmetic Science Forum, and I thought it would make for a good discussion. The question was, how do you go about switching ingredient vendors? We want to switch ingredient vendors because of a lower price and lower minimums. Can you just switch one ingredient out for another? First, we have to talk about why would you switch cosmetic ingredient sources? Just remember, it's always a good idea to think about why you'd want to have an alternative source for a raw material. There are a number of reasons. First, there's price. You can get a raw material for a lower cost, and so this is an excellent reason to switch suppliers. Number two is lower minimums. You can buy less of the ingredient. This is a particularly important for small businesses. And number three is insurance. If you have a single source raw material, you are at the mercy of your supplier, and so if they want to raise the price or something goes wrong, you're kind of on the hook. You should have other sources just in case something goes wrong. And finally, number four is reliability. You need to have a supplier who will be able to reliably fill your orders. And if you're single sourced on an ingredient, this could be a problem if they get too busy with, say, a bigger customer. Unfortunately, changing from one source to another isn't as simple as just buying from a new source. The main problem is that the ingredients that have the same name don't necessarily have the same composition. INCI names cover a wide range of mixed materials. For example, cetyl alcohol from one supplier can have a higher percentage of C16 materials than the cetyl alcohol from another supplier. They have the same name, but they just aren't the same thing. Another problem is that the suppliers often make raw materials in a different way, which can lead to different residual materials in the finished product. Residual materials are frequently hidden in a raw material, but they can wreak havoc on certain ingredients in your formula. The result can be a color change, viscosity change, fragrance change, or some other formula destabilization. The bottom line is that you can't just switch raw materials from one source to another without proper testing, of course. So let's look at how you go about approving a different supplier. To approve a new supplier, there are a number of things you need to do. First, you need to make sure the specification, or specs as we call them, for the ingredients match. To do this, you can look at the certificate of analysis of the C of A that the new supplier provides with samples. Then compare this document to your current specification sheet and note where there are differences. Then you can tell the new supplier changes in the specs that they need to make. It may also be easier to just give the new supplier your specification sheet and ask that they meet it. Remember, specifications, just like price, are negotiable. Once you have matching specs for the new raw material, you'll need to make batches and run some tests. The first test is simply to see what happens to your batch when you use the new raw material. Make a batch with your current raw material and make one with the new raw material. And keep all the other raw materials the same, essentially. And then you check things like pH, viscosity, appearance, the odor, and really anything else that might be different. You should also conduct performance tests. The specific tests you conduct will depend on the type of product that you're making, of course. For example, for cleansing products, you would run something like foam tests. For skin lotions, you might run a moisturization test. For really any kind, you want to run you want to use the products yourself to see if they're different. If things look good, you'll have to conduct stability tests of the formula in your final packaging. If the change is significant enough, for example, this formula is a big seller for you, you'll also want to consider running consumer tests. But once you are satisfied that you can't tell any differences, you can start using the new raw material. Note, it may make sense to make a batch where you blend the new raw materials with your current source, just to make sure that you can safely blend the two ingredients in the future. Sometimes when you're making a batch, you may run out of a raw material and then be forced to use something from a different supplier. Of course, there are some ingredients where it's not too risky to use an alternate supplier. Things like glycerin, propylene glycol, and sodium chloride, they're going to be similar that there really is very little risk in just using a different source with, you know, minimal testing. But materials like natural ingredients, fatty alcohols, and surfactants are much more risky, and for these, you'll want to do a full battery of tests. So there you have it. Formulation tips on choosing secondary sources for your raw materials. It's really a good thing that you should do. Always have a second source for any raw material. Next up, we have our interview with Irina Tudor. Irina Tudor has had a varied career in the sciences. She is currently the owner and operator of Irina Tudor Consultancy and also runs a science communication platform called Something Smelly, which is dedicated to educating the public about scents and olfactory research. She is a graduate of the University of Maastricht and has also completed the SCS Cosmetic Science Program and the IFEAT Aroma Studies Program. Welcome to the program, Irina.
Hi, Perry. It's so great to hear you. I'm such a big fan.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I'm a fan of yours, too. Now, we first learned about Irina and actually our Cosmetic Science Forum. That's chemistcorner.com/cosmeticsciencetalk. And she's an expert there, and she gives lots of advice about fragrances and the interaction with cosmetic ingredients. And I thought we'd have her on the show just to talk about that aspect of cosmetic science. But before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the cosmetic industry?
Of course, Perry. It would be my pleasure. Well, for me, it's been a rather long and unusual adventure. My passion for making my own fragrance and cosmetics has always been a part of my life because I've been suffering from eczema and allergies. I thought I was doomed to medicated salves and unscented life, but I loved exploring and experimenting with fragrance and cosmetic raw materials. So I began formulating my own cosmetics and fragrances at a young age, and after spending a decade in the academia teaching and researching health science, which I have a master's degree in, at a Maastricht University in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. 2004, something unusual happened. It was the year when I actively began investigating becoming a perfumer. And the reason for that was that I read this amazing book called The Emperor of Scent by Chandler Burr. So I would advise anyone who is interested in the fragrance industry to start there with that book.
And what did you find inspiring about that book?
Well,
what's the story about?
The story is it's a very clever written journey about the fragrance industry in general and the science of scent in specifically. It talks about Luca Turin. Of Turin, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. He's called, and he's a biophysicist that began investigating how the nose works. And he came up with pretty wild ideas about almost quantum mechanics of smell via smelling perfumes as a hobby. And it was so enticing and exciting, and it was the first time that I think it's the first book that opens the door of an industry that is tightly closed to non-scientists and even perfume enthusiasts because of trade secrets.
Right.
Perfume and fragrance are one of the industry biggest best kept secrets, together with flavors like Coca-Cola. And you know, it's a huge industry we didn't, certainly 10 years ago and before the internet, we didn't know much about. And what Burr does is explains quite a bit about the industry and the journey of one scientist in that industry.
Well, it sounds like a great read. I'll try to put a link in the show notes here.
Yes.
So after you were inspired by that, then how did that lead you into the cosmetic industry?
What I first did was going online and looking right away where I could be. How can I become a perfumer? Is there like a perfumery education? But the possibilities were very slim, and it seemed like the only people that had a real shot at working as a perfumer were people born in Grasse, that's France. Mm-hmm. So one would you don't have to be really lucky and receive internal training when working for a fragrance house of being born into a family of perfumers. So I kept going through the internet and everything I could find, and I stumbled upon this distance learning program of the Society of Cosmetic Scientists, aka SCS,
yes,
which
out of
is
the UK.
Based in the UK. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, and they have a module, a unit on perfumery. So I got in touch with them and asked them if I could follow that unit first before I did the whole program. And also because my end goal was to develop and release my own line of perfumes and fragrance cosmetics. So I told them, please let me begin with perfumery first and I'll do the rest of the course later. I know I can, but perfumery has my main interest at the moment. And they said, okay. So I began the course and then market research for my own business. And it was so much fun to catch up with the rapid increase of information available online about perfume and beauty. It was the time that the review websites showed up, and several fora and blogs and YouTube was getting on. So there were channels, there were people really into perfume and perfume lovers and perfume nerds. And I end up devoting all my free time in exchanging tips and tricks with others. Also, I met other do-it-yourselfers. And at the same time, I was drumming up interest for my own products.
Mm-hmm.
So this led to formulating and manufacturing my own customized fragrances and products and cosmetic products on a small scale. And I was gathering as much feedback as I could. And thus, yes?
Let me do an edit point. It is amazing, really, the power that the internet has, especially for
yes.
people looking to start their own lines and
yes.
learn how to do things like that.
Yes, because this was 4 years before your own chemist corner began.
Mm-hmm.
By then, you didn't even have the e-commerce you now have, where you can easily put up your own web shop. Facebook was just starting up, so it was all very in the early stages.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just 10 years ago. Imagine. Can you imagine? So, with a little help from my friends, I compiled enough information to complete safety tests of all my products, and I was ready to release a whole line. So I was looking into switching to a bigger lab space and expanding my brand. And I met this energetic R&D manager that led a branch of an international, well-renowned cosmetics manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
So their lab were also in Maastricht, the Netherlands, and they specialized in applied polymer chemistry for cosmetics and were patenting new technologies. So, but we got talking and they were looking for a junior cosmetic chemist. So in a wild moment, I applied and I got the job.
Wow.
I was so psyched when I heard that, that I discussed details. I told them about my experience and my business plans. And this job really gave me the exciting opportunity to explore the cosmetic industry from the inside. But because of the trade secrets and their patenting development, the work requires strict confidentiality, meaning that I had to put my own business on ice.
Ah.
So that was a change of plans, but I could continue my SCS program. And I could do actual lab work as a cosmetic chemist.
So you got some experience there, but then
yes.
eventually you left there to start your own thing.
Yes, it was during my work at the lab, I was taught extremely useful things like stability testing and raw materials and chemical analysis. toxicology, regulatory aspects, good manufacturing practices, even biochemistry, by biotechnological methods of synthesizing raw materials. So it was a very good start in in-depth training of what it means to be a cosmetic chemist. And but I wanted to do something with scent, and everything I did was either unscented or scented with already made fragrances. So I asked my employer if they had a possibility, an entry point in the fragrance industry. And he said, well, not at the time, but you can look some things up on your own if you want to. And I came across, via a colleague, an educational program with the International Federation of Essential Oils and Aroma Trades, in short, IFEAT. And this is a program that is only available via referral of well-established cosmetic and fragrance businesses. So I could join them and train as a perfumer by classical perfumery guidance, people working for Chanel, Dior, international flavors of fragrances, Givaudan. It was like I felt like I won the golden ticket to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Right.
Seriously. Yes, indeed, my employer said, I could do this for you, and then if you want to take up this further, you have to do it on your own. So I began something smelly, which is still my Twitter handle, by the way.
Yes.
And I began it as an educational open access platform where I could share my industry insights with the world in an anonymous and factual ways that wasn't in conflict with the signed NDAs at first.
Right. Sometimes that's a note to cosmetic chemists or scientists really working for industry, is sometimes you have to be anonymous.
Yes, you have to. There is no other way, especially if you're involved in patents or otherwise trade secrets. There is no other. And the most perfumers, you know, and like flavorists are anonymous. It's not like on the brand of your favorite detergent, the name of the perfumer that made the scent it's written. No,
yeah.
You just know the brand. So, and or your favorite, or Coca-Cola, or your favorite brand of chips. It's all anonymous.
Right. I mean, sometimes you'll have a celebrity who put their name on a fragrance, but of course, they weren't the ones who made it.
No. So I think the whole cosmetic industry, it takes a bit of getting used to working in silence, and I think that's okay to know that the work you do and what you make, it's being it gives pleasure to people, and you take pleasure in just knowing that people are enjoying your product.
Yeah, absolutely. So that got you out of the corporate world and into starting your own thing, and so.
Yeah.
What is this business of yours, and what kind of services do you offer?
First it was something smelly. It was an open platform, and then I began Irina Tudor Consultancy, and that was and still is a business that was aimed at first to doing olfactory research.
Which, incidentally, you have an excellent website, I have to say. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes here.
Thank you so much. It is irinatudor.nl.
Gotcha.
So I started a consultancy business, and I used my network from the SES program, the IFEAT program, my former employer. And there were quite a few people that were interested in doing independent olfactory research. And that was, and still is, part of the marketing research. as you may know, before a product hits the market, this marketing or sales department wants to know how the product is perceived by consumers before they release it. Mm-hmm. So, in order to fine tune the last details, they present the product to a panel of consumers. But also a panel, first it goes to a panel of sensory evaluators, then perfume experts, then consumers. Yeah, and it depends on the brand what kind of protocol they used, but I was developing all kind of protocols for different kind of brands. And I was, most of the research was also confidential because it was brand specific and related to a brand. And while now my aim for this year is to actually, I am writing grant proposals to do olfactory research that can be published in journals.
Ah, that would be excellent.
So to actually do science like science is meant to be shared. And I'm a huge fan of open access.
Well,
so,
I too am a fan of open access, and it would be nice to see that the cosmetic industry and even the fragrance industry specifically gets more open.
Yes, and that's my goal, is to do more research. So I'm gathering funds. As I worked in the academia, I know my way around grant proposals and how to do things. Uh-huh. But it's still quite challenging because olfaction, smell, it's one of the senses that are often forgotten. We mostly get alarm if we smell something different or something alarming. Like fire, if your food is not up to date anymore, that's why I began something smelly, because smelly things like it's something that's bad, that's something you don't want.
Right.
But we need the smellies to keep alert and to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good warning system.
It's a wonderful warning system, and it's also linked. That's what my consumer research revealed, that it's very it's highly linked with our sense of comfort, with being home. Like you, the smell of your own house, you don't smell it, but when you go away on travels and you come home, then you instantly relax because you smell like home.
Yes.
It smells like home. So
it is really amazing the impact that fragrance has on the success of a product too. I've seen consumer tests where you give them exactly the same formula, but they'll be use a different fragrances, and it'll affect things like how moisturizing they thought the product was, or how much foam there was.
Yeah.
Even though if we measured these things, they would be exactly the same.
Yes, it's. From my research, there were three things that were very important in sensory research, and that's texture, color, and fragrance. Mm. So if you change those around while keeping a formula the same, then you know that something else, then that's called a halo effect, that something else influences the consumers than the formula.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's part of my job, is to get also to inform, to educate the public about smells, about how important our sense of smell is, but also about the research that is done, the research that it needs to be done, like how the fragrance and the cosmetic industry should go about people that lose their sense of smell due to age. Mm-hmm. And our population, our world population, is increasingly aging. So, and you also have the old people smell odor. And there aren't many products that really focus on such things. And so more research is needed. Like, I hope to it. I was reading the other day a paper on genetics, the genetics of smell, that we everyone perceives the world differently. Smell like before, because we have about 400 olfactory receptors, but they're not all evenly sensitive.
Right.
So,
right.
To someone, a blue French cheese may smell delicious, while to the other, smells awful, or they don't even smell it. Asparagus is such a genetic programmed predisposition. If you eat asparagus, you get the typical asparagus pea smell.
Right, right.
And some people can't smell that. So it's really interesting what consequences are from science to products.
And it's an area of research where there hasn't been a lot of research. So there's a lot to study there.
Yes, and that is indeed so. And that's my main aim, is education and research, which also brings me to another, to making perfumery education more available to all.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I was very lucky to get into. It's still not available to anyone. So what I'm doing is, like you, I'm putting together a training program for people that want to design perfumes and to learn to smell like a professional, but don't have the means to go to the through the proper channels. And I give them the means to learn how to design a perfume and how to get better at it.
Well, that sounds like an excellent program, and I look forward to that coming out. Well, we'll be
sure
to have you back on when that's ready to be released.
Yeah, like you, I'm first working on a textbook that I hope to finish. That would be the main backbone of the program. And then when I finish that and I put it online and make it available, right now I'm in the beta phases. I'm testing it here and there with people around the world, and I'm gathering feedback. And people so far are really enthusiastic about it. So I hope it becomes a bigger success. I can only hope it becomes a bigger success as your program.
Well, that's great. And we look forward to it. Now, if somebody wanted to get in contact with you, what would be the best way to do that?
I think the best way would be via my website. That's irinatudor@.nl. That's
okay.
irinatudor.nl. Or somethingsmelly.com, which is also, somethingsmelly is also a Twitter handle, via Twitter, via LinkedIn, or the forum.
Oh, yes.
The Chemist Corner forum.
Right through the Chemist Corner forum. All right,
yeah.
Well, we'll put links to all of that stuff in the show notes, but thank you so much for coming on the show, Irina, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you so much, Perry. It's been such a pleasure.
Well, that's all the time we have for our program today. Thank you so much to our guests and for you for listening. I appreciate it. I've got the New York SCC National Meeting coming up in a couple of weeks. That's December 11th and 12th in downtown Manhattan. And I'll be attending there. If you happen to be attending, feel free to come up and say hi. Always like to see fans of the program. As always, we have our Cosmetic Science Forum, and I encourage you to participate in the discussion over there. We've got, there's a lot of great discussions going on about cosmetic formulating, and if you ever have any problems and you run into challenges, that's an excellent place to get potential solutions. Also, you can follow us on Twitter. We are on Twitter as Chemist Corner, and we had a recent... we have discussions with cosmetic chemists there with the hashtag #COSCHEMChat. So, CosChemChat. It's a great opportunity. You can just see what cosmetic chemists from around the world think about various topics. All right, that's all for me, and I thank you for listening. Now, go make a difference.